Welcome to OpTech Recap number 370. Today we're going to talk about simplicity, four proposed opcodes for doing elliptic curve operations in Bitcoin. We have a draft bib for OpTweak ad and more. Merch and I are joined by three guests this week. I'll give them a chance to introduce themselves briefly. Russell? Russell left. Okay. Roast Beef?
Hey, Roast Beef, also known as Lalu, Bitcoin developer for many years now, CTO and co-founder of Lightning Labs, and working on other projects along the way.
Jeremy?
Hi, I'm Jeremy. I am a, long-term Bitcoin contributor, and I work on a project called Char Network, which is like a layer two consensus orchestration system.
I have a Char pill, Jeremy. I'm waiting.
One day we'll do something, so just... I put it in a conveniently easy to long-term store format.
Cold storage, okay. We don't have any significant news this week, so we're going to jump to our monthly segment on changing consensus. If you're following...
I take great offense at that.
What, you don't like being the changing consensus segment instead of the news segment?
No, you said you don't have any, important news.
We don't.
Yeah, we have two elliptic curve BIPs. That's important news.
Oh, I'm speaking strictly in off-tech terminology. We put that under the changing consensus monthly segment, equally, if not more exciting for listeners than the boring news section, Jeremy. If you're listening, we're going to just go a little bit out of order. We lost one of our guests at the time that I hit the record button here, so we're going to hope to get him back. Russell, so we're going to skip to the second item in the changing consensus segment titled Draft BIP for Adding Elliptic Curve Operations to TapScript. Roast Beef, you posted to the Bitcoin Dev mailing list an idea for adding four opcodes to Bitcoin's TapScript to support elliptic curve operations: EC.add, EC.mul, EC.negate, EC.xcord. What would we be able to do with these, Roast Beef?
Good question. I mean, so I think quite a lot of stuff. I guess I have like two things in mind. Like, one is sort of like at the micro level, and one sort of like at the macro level. Right. The micro level is like, any sort of scripts around sort of like reveal or private keys or sort of like composition of those. For example, like you can do something like sort of like unroll a PTLC in a sense, like on in an actual opcode basically, because typically sometimes people maybe implement them using sort of like things like adapter signatures. In this case, you could just have someone reveal the private key for a particular public key, and then off chain and use that combined in other areas. And so there's other, a bunch of other series of sort of like, cool things you can do for that. For example, like using this, you could actually re-implement sort of like a BIP340 signatures, like, with individual opcodes, right? And that's actually the reason for some of the like negate and xcord and things like that, in order to be able to, compare and actually do the signature validation properly. Using that, you could also do, other like variations on these type of signatures as well. And that's sort of like, toolkit for EC operations generally. And I think we know like the use of those with things like adapter signatures and scriptless scripts and so forth, right? But like the bigger thing that I had in mind was sort of like a pattern that I'd seen emerge, which I think makes a lot of sense, something I've been thinking about for some time, around sort of like what I call it sort of like on-chain state machines, right? So maybe people following some of the work people know on Cat, for example, for Stark, sort of kind of things like that, they had something they called sort of like a caboose, right? And the caboose was basically a particular, I think it was a witness script hash output that committed to some data basically, right? And the idea was that, there was like a simple example, I think it was like a counter example, where first like they were committing to one, and then two, and then three, and four, and it's basically, counting on chain. Something that sounds like super trivial, and it's like, why would you ever want to do that? And if you look at, the size of the transactions, maybe because some of the inefficiencies of making, these type of covenants using Opcat. But I think that's very interesting because that shows sort of like a way to do sort of like, programming a Bitcoin and Bitcoin script that's more sort of like a functional style, right? So the way you sort of like have like your state of your accumulator basically, and then you have some sort of like map or reduce operation, right? Either you're just trying to make sure that accumulator is updated properly. For example, in that case, it's just incrementing the counter one, or you're also producing other outputs along the way, right? And then so I can view this as sort of like a state machine where, you as the user, you can basically send in these like signed statements, maybe depending on what the statement is basically, and then you're able to use the system to actually compute that on the other side, right? And so the limitation I was trying to resolve, and I think it's also something that is a little more powerful, is rather than like use this extra caboose output to basically drag along the state, you can actually just use the TapScript tree itself, right? So the way I view it is sort of like you have like the TapScript tree, you have like your code, which is already there, that's TapScript leaves, multisig, things like that, rails. And then alongside of that, you also have a commitment to sort of like, let's say state, right? Once again, it's just a commitment. You're not actually putting the data on the chain itself, right? And along the way, assuming you have some additional covenant capabilities, you'd be able to actually, number one, prove that like a particular item of the state was committed to in that tree. And that's the whole thing about the elliptical operations, basically. Because today, you would also need something like a canned Merkle tree hopper or a cow, whatever else. Because if you have something like a cat, then you can actually just, recompute the TypeScript tree, then all the way at the top, then you basically do, the TypeScript equivalent operation, either using the set opcode or these other things to actually get the output public key. Then you could assert that itself, actually matches up properly. So now we have a paradigm where you basically have your code, which is maybe, immutable in a sense sometimes, basically, because that's sort of like the code of the state machine itself. It can accept inputs. Sometimes those inputs are actually proving the state that was committed to in another branch of the tree, basically. And you can move forward and actually implement, state machines like this on chain, right? And I have some other stuff I'm working on that's like not fully, complete yet, but this is sort of like what I think is like a necessary component just for changing the way that people default think about creating these systems on chain, because people have talked about covenants, but not necessarily this kind of like state propagation thing. And I will say that something like a CCV probably has similar components of it as well, but this is like a different philosophy of are you going to do one particular opcode for it, or are you going to do something a little more generalized that takes up more op success slots or whatever, but actually maybe has some greater functionality. And that's sort of my motivation for behind this. And then I have some other examples, in there. And so, for example, another thing is you could actually use this to implement checksig from stack. I'm not advocating, for one or the other, basically, but just like showing how that you can sort of unroll some of these operations into the more primitive opcodes, basically, and then use those in series. And then one part of the BIP talks about sort of like the costing model. Because for example, today you have like a sig hop budget, so that's cost. I don't know what people call it these days anymore, but every single short signature is a 50, sig cost or weight, basically, right? And the weight is based on sort of like the serialized size of, I think it's like the input itself, right? So one question is, okay, well, if you're introducing these additional computation opcodes, basically, you should have a way to somewhat like align with the existing cost model, right? So people probably seen in the past, Rusty Russell had his whole grace restoration, which aimed to completely redo the costing model in Bitcoin script in general, basically, because he was enabling XOR and all these other things as well. This doesn't take that as far of a jump and just says, okay, at least it starts from the goal. Okay, if you can use it to actually re-implement a checksig operation, it should be more expensive to reconstruct the checksig operation using these opcodes than checksig alone, right? So I think the way it worked, checksig was like 50 sig ops. If you did this thing, it would be like 72 or 70 or 75 or something like that, right? So it's like around 50% more expensive. That's just at least to incentivize people, because you would pay the sig op cost of using this, basically, and also the weight. But if you really, really needed that use case, because maybe you were doing something a little more fancy, maybe you're willing to pay for it, right? So, there's definitely probably more to be done around additional benchmarks and things like that to look at, worst case, block construction and things like that, because, you can do things like swap and then, multiply, not in a loop. It's still, bounded because there are no loops in the Bitcoin script. But that was like another, thing around there, around like thinking about like the cost of these additional stuff. That's sort of like the summary of kind of like motivation, what it can be used for, and some other questions that came up, during the design of this, this. And then I also have some code in BTCD as well, because I wanted to go all the way, and like me actually writing the code helped me like realize some of the importance of like some of the stuff around like having the gate and, the X chord as well. And Jeremy gave some great feedback as well around like potentially not making certain things implicit, because right now the way it works, like if you have like an empty vector element, that's counted as the generator. If you're going to do like a scalar, base multiplication, basically, but you can also just have like an op generator itself. Once again, it's another opcode, but if you look at like the actual code of it, it's trivial, because every EC library has some constant for the generator, and you just push that into the stack as well. So there's probably some changes you can make on that around handling point at infinity, things like that. I think that's some things that I'll start to like refine and maybe put out some additional demos for that. But I sort of just wanted to get it out there because it's been in my mind, and in my Git repo locally for a long time. So I want to put it out there and then just at least start some discussion and then follow up later with some of like what I think to be the grand vision and other use cases behind it.
Jeremy, I saw that you had replied to Roast Beef's Bitcoin Dev mailing list post. What was your initial feedback and maybe just your general opinion on the approach?
I guess also just for the for the listeners, I think part of the timeline on this is that I think while he's been working on this or talking about this for quite some time, I remember hearing about it, and then I posted about TweakAd, and then I think I maybe forced your hand that you like had to post and finally get it out of the oven.
I just used like delayed flights, and I was sitting in like an airport lounge, and then you posted, and I was like, okay, well, let's put this together. But I thought it was cool that it was like a different angle. One sort of like dedicated particular thing that's like focused on, enabling one thing, one that has that, but then also has other aspects as well. I think we see this a lot in Bitcoin script sort of like philosophy around which direction do you go for, the super generalized thing or the one that's a little more specific.
And so I think I just give that, that context for the listeners, just for the sense of like these things, you know, it's not really like that competitive. It's like, you know, I think we're both happen to have been thinking about this kind of thing for a while. So publishing some of the, you know, research and options, presenting it to the community. I would
like hallway conversations in the past around this.
Yeah, I would personally be pretty like happy with, like this set of things. Most of the feedback that I was giving was sort of in relation to, exactly how they've been specified. One thing that I, that I had noticed was that there's maybe like a couple missing operations that would be important to include. And then that the general APIs didn't seem to compose in the way that I think would be most developer friendly. And that's because in a elliptic curve, you have a notion of like one, and then you have a notion of infinity. And then the inputs and outputs reused like the same thing for like one and infinity. And so my recommendation was to, instead of like using, some tricks to make things compress, just make it a little bit more what you see is what you get, which would give you like the, like, and I guess this is kind of like a thing is, you know, maybe a good way of putting it is my goal is to make these opcodes the actual literal mathematical functions that they claim to be, as opposed to an API to access that mathematical function. And I think that those are probably, there's a lot of conveniences if you're defining opcodes to make them be an API to access a function, if you call it the right way, and then something else, if you call it, you know, like a different way and like maybe take shortcuts, yeah. In, you know, how you specify the API. But then there's a lot of foot guns of like, you know, you would say, like, oh, this is EC addition. But if you happen to pass in this other value, then it will do something that is also EC addition, but with some, you know, other thing, it can just kind of get a little bit confusing. So from my perspective, it's better to just do the most literal thing. And that was my main feedback.
Just for clarification, what Jeremy's referring to is that like basically like a notion of like a zero and one, basically one being the generator, zero being before infinity. Sometimes the way the BIP works, like it'll accept zero to mean generator, but output, you know, or like, sorry, accept like an empty slice to mean the generator, but then output an empty slice again to mean the point of infinity. And I think I was trying to at least like he's saying, compress it a little bit more and like make the, you know, API rather than the actual operations, but that would make everything more explicit. And I think, you know, less error prone, because something you see a lot sometimes in programming is that like, depending on the language, sometimes there's like, you know, two Boolean arguments basically, and like they're right next to each other. And sometimes people swap them. And then a code review realize like, oh, that should have been false. This should have been true. What he's talking about could sort of like help to avoid something like that and just have less surprising behavior.
Yeah. And then the other, you know, feedback was like adding a few opcodes. So one was an ops EC lift X even, which if we added like an op internal key, that would put the internal key on the stack, which is also kind of proposed and relatively popular. This would let you lift that point to be usable with this set of APIs. Otherwise, it wouldn't be usable. And it also kind of undoes one of the other operations. It's not perfectly, but once you do it like once, then it will cycle as an undo. But the first time you do it, you might, you know, drop the parity. And then that's useful just for like talking to the external API that like Bitcoin uses. Mm-hmm. And then instead of doing like the punning, it is as related as, you know, it's just actually maybe kind of nice to put the generator on the stack directly. So it's a little bit less efficient. If we really cared about that, there'd be ways to like optimize, you know, patterns where you see the generator used. But it's a nice, you know, kind of straightforward one. And then the other feedback that I gave as I thought a little bit more about what it would really mean to have these operations is that because doing this will mean something to someone out there, but like an elliptic curve is kind of like, you know, some kind of like monad, but there's like a way of like popping out of it. And so if you're doing math operations inside of the elliptic curve, you can then do like a verification at the end that like, okay, I did all this math, an algebra inside, and then let me check a naked value if I multiply it by the generator is equal to all those operations that I just did inside of the elliptic curve. And then that will tell you the result of having done the math outside of the curve as well. In theory, you know, in practice, it's inside of a field. So there's a little bit of complexity there depending on what operations you're doing. But as an example, this would give you like perfectly functional, like 64-bit math operations. And so I think that there's a question for me of like, if we were to add these elliptic curve operations, would that mean that we should also generally add some other like arithmetic operations and, you know, maybe even do the different types of like field arithmetic plus like, you know, unsigned integer arithmetic and just give the couple of variants of things that people might be emulating with these opcodes. And then I gave kind of a pithy statement of like, you know, what you enable that might use be used commonly should be enabled efficiently. And that's also a piece of feedback that could be used to say like checksig from stack should still probably be an opcode rather than, you know, elliptic curve opcodes. Because if that's the main thing that people are going to be doing, you know, it's such a common use pattern that giving, you know, the straightforward API might still make sense even if these exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it makes sense. Now, I know people in the past have worked on field operations. I think Chris Stewart had worked on some in the past. But yeah, I'm also of the mindset that like just because there's redundancy in sort of like opcodes, basically, doesn't mean that's necessarily a bad thing, right? Because a lot of these, like there's like an efficient way to do the particular thing. The generalized way maybe has more use cases, basically, but people can stick to that efficient, you know, aspect of the set, right? But so, and like, for example, like if let's say there were to be like a CAD opcode and a more sort of like precise covenant to injection opcode, I don't think those would conflict necessarily because, you know, CAD can do Merkle trees and things like that as well. And but then otherwise you'd lean for the more efficient one, basically, just in terms of, you know, space and also just effort, you know, for the upgrade itself, for the script. One cool thing I saw on yours for the two guys is sort of like you know, one thing I didn't think about necessarily was how you mentioned you sort of like selected the ordering of the inputs, basically, such that you wouldn't necessarily need swaps as much to compose. I thought that was like a cool, you know, aspect, basically, that I hadn't gone as far on yet.
Yeah, I guess I can talk a little bit, you know, I don't know if we're ready to transition off this. I can talk a little bit about what TweakAd is.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all have questions first, and then we can go.
Well, why don't we just call this the dividing line between the two topics, and then I can just do a quick intro, and then Jeremy can go, and you guys can continue on whichever direction you want.
I was curious whether Russell had some thoughts on either of these.
Or either one?
The proposal that for TweakAd or
no sorry, first maybe just we've been talking about the elliptic curve operations and you've been working a lot on how to do script or an alternative to it rather, so I thought this conversation might be right down your lane.
Of course we have specific jets for tweaking, and we have with the exact same idea of, or in particular for recursive covenants, that you'd need to carry your state along with you in the transaction. The best place to do that is to stash it as a commitment in the tap tree, and then you can verify your values on the window stack match the committed values. And I think at the last minute we added like this tap data. Tweet a hash value for holding the data to make sure it's different from a tap script and easy and providing Jeff to make that tap data hashed stuff. So all these things are exactly the sort of stuff that we've made into Jeff's simplicity and seems pretty well designed. I haven't gone over it in detail myself, but it's along the same thinking that we've done.
Yeah, it seems like a natural place in terms of like committing to stuff, basically. And at least the thing that I was improving on is at least not having that extra output that you're lugging around and just sort of staying in pure Taproot land as well.
All right, Mike, will you transition us to the second news item?
Sure. Draft BIP for UpTweakAd. This was motivated by Jeremy's post to the Bitcoin Dev mailing list about a draft BIP for adding UpTweakAd to TapScript. And it looks like the same kind of tweaking that's currently done in Taproot on the internal key, which is what we sort of alluded to and talked about earlier, but bringing it in as an opcode in TapScript. So, Jeremy, why don't you do your summary of TweakAd?
Yeah, it's relatively simple. And I think that maybe the easiest way to explain it is presently there is a code path in Bitcoin which for consensus validation does exactly this operation. And it does that for proving that a script path or really like the script root existed, for a taproot output. This exposes that API, and it makes it available as an opcode. There are a couple different ways that something like this could be formulated, in terms of like where you draw the line. Do you give a vector of scripts and then try to Merkleize them into something and then do that? Well, that's maybe a separate functionality dealing with Merkle trees and things like that. This really just is trying to do that one tweak operation and then be completely agnostic to what the data is that the tweak is made of. And so that's something that like supplying the tweak and hashing that is left as a separate concern from this opcode. A motivation for me in doing this one in particular is that tweaking, and particularly a tweak add operation, is pretty powerful. It's something that we know long term we probably would want to be able to do this. There's, it's like a part of Taproot. So unless we're throwing out, how Taproot works and doing Taproot V2 or something, like this is going to be something that's going to be important anytime you're doing any state carrying covenant using a Taproot output. And so having a, the ability to manipulate and do that, I think is valuable. Other opcodes have proposed this functionality as well, as like a part of it. For example, I believe like Tapleaf update verify, I think you could use that to generate a tweak add, as well, maybe through a kind of like a roundabout way, but, it in theory is possible. Because it's doing that operation, but this is just a plain opcode. It doesn't let you do elliptic curve math really. It lets you do like this one operation. It turns out that it's what we would maybe call like a lossy operation. That means that if you try to structure a general like algebraic equation with it, because the 32 byte keys throws away this parity bit, you lose a little bit of information as you go. And so that would make it difficult to use this to do like general like cryptographic protocols, unlike the raw elliptic curve things. One of the benefits of this though is that elliptic curve math is a little bit like maybe malleable, and so because of that, like generally you can like negate a value and then like work in the negative and then maybe invert it later. So that this really doesn't have as much potentiality for malleability concerns as more raw elliptic curve operations would have. It's a question whether we actually really care about witness malleability, but at least like this is a straightforward one, for not having that much malleability. There still might be one or two paths through which you could maybe get two things to give you the same value, but it's pretty restrictive. Now in terms of what you can actually do with it, it turns out that tweak add is sort of inherently similar to op pair commit, which has been proposed previously, and so you can use tweak add in conjunction with something like checksig from stack to be able to sign off on pairs of data. This means that if you were building something like LN symmetry, you would not need to use the annex for data, which is something that I've been opposed to. I think the annex has like a future, purpose for a consensus reason. And so using it for junk data stuffing, I think is like not an appropriate use for it. But if we had something like tweak add, you would be able to take the message that you want to sign, and then you can tweak it by your additional authenticated data and then sign that pair, and it will be binding to both of those values. And so then that's like
one question that, like, I thought the role of, like, the Anderson Assembly owns some was, like, forcing the party to publish some data alongside their transaction, right? But, like,
that's what this would require. Like, if you
in the witness instead, basically, is what you're saying.
It would be, well, I mean, the annex is in the witness. It's just not on the stack. So it just it's on the stack. That also means that if you had multiple signatures that are signing off of the same transition, but each with their own secret, you could have multiple conflicting secrets that could all get revealed rather than the annex is like one secret or, you know, it's not really a secret. It's one disclosable, let's call it that. It's one disclosable that, you know, has to be for all of the signatures on that transaction. So I think it's a little bit more flexible overall. And then the other, you know, like you can kind of apply that principle of being able to commit to more than one piece of data, and you can actually make Merkle trees as well. So you can use that for like lookup tables and other applications. It's relatively efficient space-wise in terms of you know, computation-wise, you're doing elliptic curves instead of hashing, so it's a little bit less validation-wise efficient. But I thought it's a nice primitive, given that we know that we want it, you know, in general for like taproot modifying purposes, and that it enables some other compelling applications that, you know, compose well with the types of protocols people are working on. Yeah, Merch?
I just wanted to point out that you answered my question from before. So obviously we can do scriptless script stuff already with the tweak of the internal key. We would, of course, have to reveal the script path and internal key, the Merkle root as a tweak, but we could tweak the supposed internal key with other things. And I thought, what's the benefit of having it as a opcode versus that? And what I took away from this is you could have, of course, many different op tweaks that live in different leaves, and you would have committed to all of them, but then choose at the time of spending which one is relevant or conducive to spend the thing. And you wouldn't be able to do that if that were tweaked directly into the internal key. So just wanted to point out that you closed that circle for me.
Yeah, you can in theory actually do that, because if you compute like I equals P plus HT1 G plus HT2 G plus HT3 G, then opening up that to any valid SHA-256 hash would basically serve as a accumulator of sort. And this is like a classical, like it's similar, very similar to like MUSIG, in terms of like proving that one of the things was there. You would have issues of like if they were like maliciously constructed. You know, those are like the same sort of like research questions that like the MUSIG process went through. So, you know, I won't say that I'm the expert there, but you can generally like you can directly tweak a key and then disclose one of the things and show that it was a member. And as long as you provide a proof of also knowing, I think, the like original point, that's secure. So, you know, that's related to like some of the MUSIG stuff.
That does sound a little more complicated though.
It's a little bit more complicated. I think compared to using it, like compared to just like doing scriptless scripts where things are tweaked, like at the taproot key tweak level, this lets you use that for keys that are used like in protocols at the script level. So like one of the interesting things that I learned, and Lalu brought this up, was that like the order of operations is kind of important of like, does it take as the first argument the like the key, or does it take the first argument the tweak? You can do either version of it. Just, you know, you would need a swap if you do that. But one of the things that I realized when I was designing like how would you use Ellen symmetry with this is I realized that you actually might, instead of tweaking the data that you're going to sign, you actually might just tweak the key with the data, you know, that you care about. So there's kind of some interesting ways that these things can interact where, you know, it's very flexible of where you can add additional authenticated data.
Yeah. And then he touched on, I guess, one of the points I brought up, the whole thing around, like he was saying that the output is sort of like a lossy value, and that like you basically lose, you know, that information on X coordinate basically. And that was one thing that like, you know, like And I think that's why I eventually added like the Xcode free lease to like allow you to sort of like get to that value again. But I think my feedback is based on like, you know, time in the past of wrangling with like bugs where like, you know, we're hashing some data or something like that itself, and we have like the wrong key, or maybe like there's some like merge group basically, and that's like incorrect. That's because along the way, maybe there was like incorrect handling of, you know, the parity byte basically of like treating like an X only key, like it was just anything else basically. And definitely, I think like at least in high level programming languages, you can do better like typing, sort of like avoid those type of mistakes. And the thing I referenced was also like MUSIC 2, initially MUSIC 2 accepted the X only keys as input for aggregation basically. And as you were saying, like because you lose that information, you have to like keep track of the parity byte in the sort of like accumulator. They eventually changed that sort of later in the bit basically to accept normal compressed keys as well. But it is something that like, you know, it is in the protocol. And I think I was actually wrong that like, you know, the checksig in top obviously does accept 32 byte keys. But I was like one thing around there around sort of like, you know, exposing it to developers versus not. But like you're saying, like if you want it to be more restrictive, that's good because then like you can't necessarily just use it in an arbitrary manner generically after you get the output. The other thing was similar to what I was talking about a little bit earlier around like the costing that like, you know, you could probably like modify that a little bit. I think he just did the simple thing of like make it the exact same thing, and that's fine too. But if you wanted to make it a little more precise, you could probably shave a few more, you know, digits off of that. But
yeah, the main issue, just to explain it like really simple terms, is that it's a weakly commutative operator tweaking, which means that A plus B is equal to B plus A 50% of the time. So, you know, you would normally expect A plus B to always be equal to B plus A, or you'd expect A plus B to be almost never equal to B plus A. But instead, it's like about 50% of the time, you know, A plus B equals B plus A.
Imagine you're debugging this basically, and like you're like, oh, it's like a Heisenberg bug. It happens 50% of the time basically. That happened to me a bunch in just like other code where it's like, oh, okay, we flipped the export, blah blah blah. But yeah, that's like something that like, you know,
yeah,
there's a bunch of programmer hours that suffered with that. But I think
yeah,
a lot better about it and handling it and knowing, you know, what to do and what not to do and so forth.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's a good point of like, you know, and maybe, you know, it means that in the future, what we'd want to do is once MUSIC is really, really tightly defined, we'd want to add opcodes that are like specific to doing MUSIG aggregations for generating like MUSIG keys dynamically. I could see that being, you know, like an interesting thing, but I can see also like that, yeah, maybe tweak add would be difficult to really do for a proper MUSIG implementation. Also, you know, computing tweaks, you know, without opcat for MUSIG would be difficult as well.
So I have one more follow-up question. Usually the paradigm for spending Bitcoin is described as revealing a witness to prove that the smart contract has been fulfilled, rather than having everyone follow through all the steps of the smart contract and thus revealing what the actual spending conditions were. And is all of this adding elliptic curve operations or revealing the tweak conditions and so forth, isn't that moving us a little bit towards more explicitly revealing stuff in the scripts about what actually our smart contracts are doing under the hood?
Well, I mean, you still have like the TypeScript layer, so you're still sort of like, you know, masking kind of like layers that you didn't necessarily take. You still have that kind of like efficiency gain as well too, but I would say like, yeah, it is just still strictly more powerful. And there are ways where you can sort of like still create that asymmetry basically of like the verification is just like a very simple step, but maybe the signer had to like do another work in order to actually arrive at that there. So I think it's still along those lines. And I think if you sort of ascribe to, you know, kind of like what Russell was mentioning earlier around sort of like that, like generally you want to be able to like commit to data on chain in some way that like is necessarily bloating the chain or something like that itself, and then use that to prove, you know, existent or like to prove something was committed to the actual script. I think this like naturally aligns in that direction. And there's definitely a lot of work I think that can be done around like, you know, additional tooling. And obviously Jeremy, you know, made a bunch of stuff with Sapio. There's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, work that he's done with this to basically show that paradigm. And to me, it's just sort of like the correct way to think about like more advanced stuff in Bitcoin script. Whereas, for example, if you look at some of the things like, you know, some of the inscription based like BRC20s or whatever, they're just like posting data into the chain and then running that like a log and then consuming the data. And that's like super bloating basically. And it's sort of like trying to like map the typical account imperative model onto Bitcoin itself, when you can basically just insert sort of like instead of view it as more of like a functional chain that's taking in inputs, producing some outputs, basically. And the important thing there is that, like, you know, the inputs that you're referencing are, like, enumerated, right? It's not like a EVM model where it's, like, any for any. You have no idea what's going to be calling. It's still something that's very, like, you know, strict and easy to follow on chain. But that's, like, my view on it philosophically.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Jeremy Roast Beef, obviously, there are the coverage in the newsletter and the links to the different posts and the BIPs that folks can dig into if they want to. Any other parting words or calls to action for the listeners?
I mean, I guess I would also just say, like, you know, everything that's being proposed is obviously, like, in conversation with everything else. But I do hope that, like, you know, we can make some forward progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, as Jeremy was saying, like, we've, you know, had a conversation with, like, many people over the years around, like, some variation of this kind of a thing. So it's not as if, like, we just both randomly thought about it. I think there's a few things that people have been thinking about, like, as far as, you know, just primitives. And I would echo what he's saying that, like, this isn't meant to, like, derail or replace anything else. I think to me, this all composes relatively well. And to me, this is, like, a missing piece for maybe some package that people have been referring to, and maybe there's, like, different subsets that, you know, could be, you know, feasible or, you know, could be impactful. And yeah, I mean, I think it'd be great just to make continued progress. I plan to do a bit more work on my end around, like, you know, writing more about this stuff and sort of, like, this, like, state machine paradigm, and then also some additional kind of, like, demos. And I have this other thing that I'm working on that, once again, like, will build on this stuff generally. But yeah, I mean, I think we can continue to make progress on this stuff. It'd be super exciting. And just to, like, you know, improve capabilities. And the main thing I always think about is just sort of, like, making it easier just to hold, you know, Bitcoin for the average individual. Cause I always see these, like, random thing, like, you know, you've seen this guy, Zach XBT, and it's like, OG, you know, 10-year Bitcoiner. They just lost, like, you know, 5 BTC, something like that. Like, that always makes me just, you know, cringe, basically. And, like, can we, you know, do better to provide people with better tools for, you know, self-custody, decentralization and all that? I think that's definitely an important thing that we can't, you know, forget about, that, like, you know, things aren't done necessarily. And, like, if things just freeze, they're right now, maybe that's a sort of, like, you know, like a local minima in sense of the
world. Yeah.
In sense.
Like, these really do make Bitcoin, like, if we have the capabilities to build the good software, like, that helps people, like, it does make Bitcoin tangibly better. So I think, like, you know, that's important. I would also just add, like, please stop trying to put data into the annex, everyone. Like, there are other ways you can accomplish your goals. So.
Exactly. But yeah.
Just by saying that, now someone's going to do it. Someone else is going to do it now, Jeremy.
No. Yeah. Full on Streisand effect.
It's going to be some Twitter bot. But yeah, the last thing there is just, like, yeah, I think this stuff is important because it gives people options versus, you know, more trusted solutions, basically, right? So otherwise, you just see, like, this race to the bottom that maybe maximizes for UX, but then is, like, slightly more trusted, and slightly more trusted, slightly more trusted. People become sort of, like, you know, we're accustomed to that. And maybe there's some big blow up that happens at the end of the day, right? So I think like, it's possible to, you know, make gains in both directions, have making things more secure and flexible, but then at the same time, you know, sort of like keeping down those trust assumptions and making sure there can't just be one person that runs with the keys, where they're trusted not to, basically. Because in that case, yeah, I can give you a very simple system that we can all use instead. So,
well, it's a positive and optimistic way to wrap up these two changing consensus items. Jeremy Roast Beef, we're going to talk with Russell about simplicity. If you have the time and the interest, I'm sure folks would love to hear your thoughts. Otherwise, we thank you for your time and joining us. If you're listening along, we are jumping back up to the details about the design of simplicity, changing consensus item. Russell, I don't think you got a chance to introduce yourself. Why don't you introduce yourself and then I'll introduce your item here.
All right. My name is Russell O'Connor. I work on the research team at Blockstream, and we've been developing an alternative to Bitcoin script, which we call Simplicity, which is sort of a Bitcoin script reimagined entirely from the foundation level.
And you started Three Threads on Delving about Simplicity recently, and we also covered Simplicity HL last week briefly in the newsletter, and I believe Simplicity is live on Liquid. So a lot of Simplicity action going on. Your Delving Simplicity series on Delving so far has three posts. There is the three fundamental ways of combining computations. There is Combinator, Completeness of Simplicity, and there is Building Data Types. How would you begin to summarize these posts for the audience?
Well, I mean, my goal is to sort of give the sort of the background that you would need to review Simplicity as consensus. But rather than, I have a large tech report, which is kind of big and intimidating, so I want to give sort of an introduction that would give readers sort of bite-sized pieces of aspects of the design of Simplicity that I might be interested in. Right. And so at the very beginning, we just start very, very abstractly with like, what is program team trying to do? It's kind of a bit of a philosophy paper, right? You know, how do we, what are the, we talked about the three fundamental ways of composing computation, which is sequential composition, parallel composition, conditional composition. And then between that one and the second article, we review, we sort of go how we realize these forms of composition directly in the Simplicity language, and how it's a little bit less direct in Bitcoin script. And then in the third one, it's a little bit more dry. We go over it's just some examples of ways of writing programs in Simplicity, because Simplicity is just this tiny language with these trivial, you know, 9 core combinators, and it's not at all apparent at first how you could actually write programs with that, right? So it's kind of amusing that using only the fundamental combining computation combinators, right, and just to add just a tiny bit more on top of that, you actually get a complete language that can define any sort of binary function at all.
Russell, we actually have a question from the audience here. Sued Salmon congratulates you on the activation and then asks about JETS, the cost of JETS on chain. He says, seems like program serialization is large and optimization still in the works. Do you have a dream list of emulated things like CCV, or have you gotten other app dev feedback to test out JET choices? Maybe also just recap the idea of JETS.
Yeah, okay. So we have this very sparse language, right? Where you sort of can define, as I said, any binary function that includes like, you know, elliptic curve operations like we've been talking about, off-tap tweak and stuff like that. You could, in theory, write this on all, you know, 32-bit addition, stuff like that, using just these forms of like little bit twiddling on if statements and pairing and things like that. It would be pretty expensive to evaluate it as raw simplicity, right? It's actually better than you might think. Like, you can actually run SHA-256 compression function, you know, in raw simplicity, and it takes like a couple seconds to run, which is too slow to be practical, but slow enough that you can actually test against it, which is kind of fun. But in order to make simplicity practical, what we do is we have these notions of JETS, which are basically like programming language intrinsics, where we have efficient C directs the implementation of certain common functionality, like adding numbers, elliptic curve operations, tap tweaking, check sig, and stuff like that. Sort of for, you know, our initial release of Simplicity, we have to choose a set of JETS that people want, without really knowing what people are going to use them for, you know, what people actually want in practice. So we sort of had to make the best guess we could for our choice of JETS that we're going to make available. And we sort of did that basically because we have sort of a Simplicity implementation of things like checksig, right? You can just look at the hierarchy of functionality you need to implement checksig, right? You need to have elliptic curve operations, and those need to have 256-bit word operations, which rely on 32-bit word operations, and all the way down to logical operations. And the hash function needs certain bitwise AND, bitwise OR, bitwise XOR operation, right? So we basically chose our initial set of JETS on the functionality that we needed to implement, you know, the definite fundamental operations like checksig and stuff like that. One of the reasons we want to, you know, try things out on Liquid is to see what people need and what people can do with Simplicity, and see if there's any blind spots that are missing, and then maybe add more JETS to support those cases. And the nice thing is that because it's fully programmable, even if we have overlooked some areas, like maybe we need some special jets to handle Stark verification or something like that, right? Hopefully you should still be able to implement what you want to implement. It might be more expensive than you would like to do, but we can maybe see those uses and get that feedback and then revisit our choice of jet in a future iteration.
I asked AJ this when we had him on talking about BLL and Bullish, but I'll ask you on the flip side. How do you think about, if you're familiar with AJ's initiative with Bitcoin Lisp, and contrasting that with Simplicity?
I made some comments on delving about it. I'm not too sure what the current status of Bitcoin Lisp is. I mean, I sort of understand that Simplicity is maybe a little bit intimidating, but I feel that, you know, if you pursue BTC Lisp, you know, and I think it's reasonable to do that, you will just walk the same path that I've been walking for the last several years, right? You'll find certain considerations, right? You need to be mindful of like the algorithmic complexity of the stuff you're doing, right? So for instance, when we decode Simplicity, we have to make sure we're running in linear time or quasi-linear time so that we don't have any more quadratic blow-ups that we've encountered in the past in Simplicity. And there's a whole bunch of things that you need to be mindful of. And I think there would be some convergent evolution in the design of BTC Lisp that would force similar design decisions to Simplicity in the end. And there certainly would be differences, but I think they would end up being closer than one might initially think beforehand. But that, of course, it remains to be seen, right? This is my stab in the dark at making a new alternative to Bitcoin Script. And it's certainly not the only possible design out there.
Merch or Roast Beef, do you have questions or comments for Russell?
Michael, which is great to see this stuff get, you know, much further along, basically. And I know since then there's like another like high level language basically that looks, you know, more sort of like friendly to kind of like different developers. I think it's just great to like, you know, see that go along more and just, you know, ideally see more additional demos and things like that. And I'd definitely be curious to learn more about what you're talking about earlier, Russell, around like those two things. I guess there was like some special opcode that like that changed the hashing of the commitment value. And I guess the other thing of, you know, the idea of like actually committing to sort of like certain data or state in the TypeScript root. Does Simplicity have like native operations, you know, to do that? Or if you could just describe that a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. Can you repeat your first one?
The first one is like, I think you mentioned that like alongside of that, there was some additional like opcode or some way of like hashing the data into this sort of like accumulator or kind of like state or maybe I misheard that.
It might have been talking about the same thing as your second question about putting data into the tap tree. Mm-hmm. Of course, because you can write sort of basically any finitary function, you can just go ahead and do whatever you want, of course. But we, our equivalent of opcodes is jets, right? And then we added near the end because we knew we wanted to help people do recursive covenants so they don't have to make mistakes by doing it incorrectly, right? So we wanted to guide them to committing to the data in the tap, into the tap tree. If you remember, we have these tag hashes in the tap tree design with the tap branch for your branch points and tap leaf for your leaves, right? And so we added specific jet support to create a tagged hash for what we call tap data, right? Which is something that's distinct from tap leaf and tap branch. So it can't possibly be misinterpreted as a script or something like that, because that would be that's another error that you could make where you try to insert data into the tap tree and then it can be reinterpreted as a tap branch or as a tap leaf, and that would be bad. So we have a little tap data hash jet that will like make a tagged hash for your tap data, making sure that it never gets confused with a script or something like that. And then we have the SHA-256 compression function, and we have a bunch of other SHA-250 related data to to certain extent what these rolling CHAK-56 opcodes that have been proposed and are also in liquid at this moment.
That makes sense. I missed that, like you're talking about, like another tag task for a specific purpose, basically to have like domain isolation. That makes a lot of sense. And then with that, you can really just build whatever you want almost in simplicity. So you just have this on the side for the efficiency of that.
I would be a little curious on the more practical side of implementing simplicity into liquid. So one of the questions that I saw brought up in the context of simplicity was that it would be a humongous code change of consensus code, how to evaluate simplicity in the context of Bitcoin script. So if simplicity were to come to Bitcoin, we'd basically introduce a whole nother scripting language that only works in some leaves. How much of a lift was that to put it into liquid? How did that work for y'all?
Well, simplicity is the entirety of the simplicity interpreter is isolated in its own C library. And I chose C library because there's this project called the Verifiable Software Toolkit, which builds on the CompSir compiler out there in Europe, which have a formal definition of semantics for C, which means that we can reason about C code, right? At the time we started, there was a similar initiative for Rust called Rust Belt, but I'm not too sure what the status of that was or is today, right? So we have this entirely distinct C library, which handles, you know, the entirety of the C interpreter, right? And then the changes to the Bitcoin code base to call into that are pretty minimal, because you just go into the interpreter.cpp, and there's a branching statement on checking the tap leaf to see if it's the tap script leaf version, and then you add another case branch in there, and then you call into the C library to call the simplicity evaluator on that. Now, it's actually slightly more complicated than that, because we also need to amend the interpreter, because if you recall in Bitcoin script, we cache a bunch of hash values of various components for the sig hashes, right? And a similar style of caching is done in simplicity. It has its own definition of hashes, and it is a more extensive subset of transaction data that pre-hashed and available for you to create custom sig hashes from. So in that, we also amend the interpreter.cpp to extend the amount of data that's cached and passed into the simplicity interpreter, the type of data that is the same between inputs for computing simplicity's version of signature hashes. And those were the only two changes. In elements, we had to do some more work, because the element is more complicated, and we had this genesis hash that we had to fish through and stuff like that, but that wouldn't be applicable in the Bitcoin case. So it's incredibly isolated, right? So you'd have to review the simplicity C library, which would be a significant effort, I admit that, and but the integration into the Bitcoin is very simple.
Right. Simple, yes, but of course it basically elevates this whole new library to consensus code, right? So surely people would want to verify that code.
of course, right? We did the same thing with libsecp, right? And it would be on the same order of magnitude, I would guess, as of a review for as libsecp was.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Russell, I think it would be interesting for the audience to understand just how much work this was. I think people have heard about it for a while, and maybe this is a chance for you to celebrate all the work you've put on. When did you start working on simplicity, for example?
I mean, it's a little hazy when I started, because when I first encountered Bitcoin back in like 2011, 2012-ish, I did not love it. I wasn't happy with the fourth like Bitcoin script language. And then, of course, all the opcodes were removed, and it wasn't actually programmable money, right? So I had like some sketches of there were some vague ideas of a language I wanted to design as early as like 2012, talking with Peter Willa about it. And, you know, like, we could have, we don't have to have the branches. Pruning was like a big design point for simplicity, right? You don't have to expose the branches on the blockchain of code that you're not actually going to execute, right? And so if we could Merkleize the abstract syntax tree of whatever language we have, we could cut off those unused branches and increase privacy and reduce space, right? And so we've been talking about masks. I mean, I've been talking about masks for a long time now, and eventually that became the Merkleized tree that we see in a different incarnation in Taproot itself, right? So so that it's been going on for a long time, but the serious work began in, you know, 2016, where I was hired by Blockstream, and they gave me the opportunity to realize my vision. And so I really had to just get down and make design decisions and try things out and make it a reality. And so I spent a little bit under 10 years working on that now, I guess.
10 years, everybody. Well, congratulations, Russell. And I will plug that on the Brink Engineering YouTube channel, we have a discussion with Russell on some of the formal verification techniques that he's used that we tried to learn a bit about. So check out that on the Brink YouTube channel. Russell, what's your call to action for folks? You want people to play around with simplicity on Liquid? Where can we bring our slightly technically adept audience to do?
Yeah, so we're working on a higher level language because there's a difference between consensus code than the code that appears on the chain and the actual writing of smart contract. I would invite you to check out our GitHub repository for Simplicity HL. You can check out our Simplicity language if you're interested in more low level stuff. Yeah, it would be good to see if we can realize there's been a lot of designs, of course, on Bitcoin mailing list and stuff like that of various smart contract protocols, whether they're vaults or lightning symmetry or things like that. You know, all of these things we should be able to realize using simplicity, right? So maybe it would be helpful to go ahead and see if we can make some proof of concepts or at least of these types of protocols that people have been talking about for a long time on Liquid and see how they work. And I'm certainly happy to help out with little snippets of simplicity. We'll need that.
So my understanding is that Liquid in general has had a bunch of covenants or more complex opcodes that Bitcoin does not have. And now it also has simplicity. Do you see a lot of interesting usage of this? What's going on Liquid with these new opcodes?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I don't think I've seen a lot of usage of these new opcodes, right? Which is a little bit interesting because people have been touting how important it is for people to get these opcodes in Bitcoin because they're so essential. But I haven't really seen much of the pickup in Liquid. I mean, I'm not looking at the blockchain as much as maybe other people are, and we're worth double checking that, right? And there could be lots of explanations for that. Like Liquid is not quite the same as Bitcoin, right? You have a federated model rather than the mining model, right? And maybe there are reasons for that. I think interest in Liquid is picking up recently, so maybe that'll promote more interest into its advanced scripting abilities, right? Because as you mentioned, like we added a bunch of new arithmetic codes, which we were sort of briefly talking about earlier. Those are on Liquid. I think we might even have the tap tweak operation on Liquid. I would have to double check that, but I think we added those operations as well, right?
It sounds like a lot of the people that have been touting these covenant proposals should just get themselves a little bit of Liquid and Liquid Bitcoin, I guess, and show off what they can do on Liquid. I hadn't considered that. Everybody keeps talking about Inquisition, of course, but there's an actual live network where you can do most of these things.
Russell, thanks for hanging on through those other news items. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but we thank you very much for your time and coming on, and obviously happy to celebrate this 10 years of work. So cheers to you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Moving to our releases and release candidates segment, we have Core Lightning 25.09. And I think we covered this when it was still in RC form last week, but they had released it. But from the newsletter, this release adds support to the XBake command for paying BIP 353 human readable addresses, and simple offers are added. Offers improved for bookkeeper support. I think bookkeeper was a separate plugin. Now it's part of Core Lightning, I think, or maybe that happened previously. This release also provides better plugin dependency management, and there's some other features and bug fixes. You should check out the release notes or listen to last week where we went through this in a more organized fashion. Bitcoin Core 29.1 release candidate 2. Actually, Bitcoin Core 29.1 was released earlier today. I don't think that there was anything notable from the release candidate 2, and I think we had actually covered that in previous week. So I don't know if there's anything that you'd like to add on 29.1 being officially out.
I think we covered it really in detail. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago.
Notable code and documentation changes. LDK 3726. This PR introduces support for dummy hops in LDK. LDK will now add these arbitrary decoy hops along a blinded path. And the motivation is stated in the PR description, quote, while blinded paths obscure node identities, they still might reveal the number of hops, potentially leaking information about the distance between sender and receiver, unquote. So in response, LDK introduced a randomized number of dummy hops each blinded path, and that's capped at 10. And those dummy hops serve no particular routing purpose, but they do act as decoys, which make it harder for an observer or a potential attacker to estimate the true position of that node, of the destination node along that path.
That's pretty cool. It always seemed a little strange that you would know exactly how many hops away someone is from the target. And then if there's just two hops or even just one hop, it would be pretty obvious if you are familiar with the topology. So this seems like a good, cool change. Also, maybe a slight correction. I believe that 29.1 was released 21 hours ago at the time of recording, so that would make it yesterday, I think, in all time zones.
LDK 4019 is a PR that's part of LDK's splicing work. It builds on the PR actually from last week, which was 3979, in which LDK added splice out support. They already had splice in support. And with this PR this week, LDK is integrating their existing splicing work on splicing in and out with the quiescence protocol, which is the essentially pausing of the channel, like certain channel activity during which a splice occurs. And this PR is part of LDK's dual funded channels and splicing project tracking issue 1621, if you want to see this PR in context of the larger effort. LND 9455 is adding support for DNS host names in Lightning node announcement messages. So this DNS host name feature is in line with the Bolt 7 spec, and it's actually address type number 5 for DNS host names to be announced on in-channel announcements. Quote, this allows users to forward node announcement with valid DNS address types, unquote. So now LND node operators can recognize a stable host name in a node announcement instead of just IP addresses. Maybe as a note here, this isn't an LND specific feature. Core Lightning and Eclair support this address type already. And this PR is part of their support for that feature. At least there's at least one more draft PR in the works to continue the feature. LND 10,103 titled Rate limit outgoing gossip bandwidth by peer. The PR description opens up with, quote, sometimes a single peer can easily use up all the bandwidth, as suggested by this log, where 125,172 messages were sent to reply to a single gossip query. This PR now puts another rate limiter on the peer level, unquote. And if you dig into the PR, you'll see that that message actually references a log, a snippet of a log file, where somebody can basically asymmetrically request something and get all of these messages back and monopolize the bandwidth. So this PR makes a few different changes. First, it increases both the gossip rate as well as the gossip message burst values, so allowing more for those two values, but it also adds a new configuration value. It's titled peer message rate bytes, and that particular option limits outgoing bandwidth used by each peer in relation to gossip messages. So I think we've seen a few of these gossip PRs over the last month or two as they revamp some of their gossip handling and fine-tune that. HWI 795 is a PR titled Fix CI. And it makes a bunch of changes beyond the CI, including small changes to support around Cold Card, Jade, Ledger, and also adding BitBox O2 Nova support. Merch, that's it for this week.
Sounds good. Hear you soon.
Russell, thanks for hanging on. We want to thank Roast Beef and Jeremy, who joined us earlier, and always for you all for listening, and my co-host, Merch. We'll hear you next week. Cheers.